So if we have qualitative variables, we're going to use Pearson's chi-square. This can be a 2x2, a 2xk, or a k-by-k, depending upon the number of categories of each qualitative variable. This is exactly the same Pearson's chi-square that we used for making between groups comparisons when we had a categorical outcome variable. The statistic doesn't care if rows are IVs and columns are DVs, or rows and columns are all just measured variables. The distinction between a between groups comparison and an association test is how you're conceptualizing those qualitative variables. The statistic doesn't care. Similarly, the statistic doesn't care if you're going to causally or associatively interpret those results. That's a matter of design. So nothing's changed. Same basic statistical model. What you do see is a change in the null statement. Back to the more generic null, there is no pattern of relationship between the two qualitative variables. Instead of the sort of implicit between group comparison that we used before, that there's no response distribution difference between the groups. Same thing. If there's a relationship, then there's a response pattern difference. If there's no response pattern difference, there's no relationship. But you will sometimes see this difference in expression just to sort of tie it into the nature of the research question or the research hypothesis. The degrees of freedom is still the number of columns minus 1 times the number of rows minus 1. Range of values is 0 to infinity. We're going to take the difference between the obtained and the expected frequency, and we're going to square that value. So no negatives allowed. Because of that, our decision criterion is simpler. We don't have to worry about absolute values or any of the things that we will with correlations. Just if the obtained is greater than the expected, we will reject the null and decide that there is a pattern to the data. Expected frequencies are obtained under the assumption that I can anticipate the frequency in each cell. And the way I can anticipate that frequency is by knowing how many are in that row and how many are in that column. If I know how many are in the row and I know how many are in the column, and there's nothing special about being in that cell because there's no relationship between what row you're in and what column you're in, then I can completely anticipate what frequency is going to be here based on the number of people in that row, the number of people in that column, and it's a very simple formula. We take the number of people in that row times the number of people in that column, divide by the total number of people, and that tells us the proportion as a frequency that we expect to find in that column, or I'm sorry, in that cell. And that's all there is to it, row times column divided by total, and you get the expected frequency, and that feeds into the formula in two places. Obtained frequency minus the expected frequency squared divided by the expected frequency. Add all that up and we get our chi-square. The degrees of freedom, again, is the number of rows minus 1 times the number of columns minus 1. And you don't have to do any of that shit by hand. That's why we have the computator. If you're using the test of independence, you start in the upper left-hand column, or upper left-hand cell, and just fill in. And then you make sure you click on the green button. That will give you your chi-square, and here's a critical value table that has a lot of values in it. Notice it doesn't have all possible values. I only included the ones that you can get out of this. There's no good way to, you can't get 7 degrees of freedom out of this one, so that's left out. Or you can go to the p-value calculator that we showed you online if you want an exact p-value. Your choice. Have fun. Self-actualize. Well, the critical value is 3.84, and at 0.01, it's 6.63. We have a chi-square of 14, and so whether we use the critical value table or go to the computator and get the exact p-value, we would reject the null and conclude there is a pattern of relationship between the two variables. If you're in this second row, you're more likely to be in the first column. If you're in this Let's try that again. If you're in this first row, you're more likely to be in the second column. If you're in the second row, you're more likely to be in the first column. There's then often an argument about whether or not there should be follow-ups. Because we've got four cells, we've got a one-number summary that tells us whether or not there's a relationship there. One of the things that you can have in chi-square that you cannot have in other sorts of analyses is what's known as an asymmetrical pattern of data. If you're in the first column, you're likely to be in the first row. If you're in the second column, there is no row differential likelihood. And so sometimes folks want to test this. And one way to test it would be to take these two numbers and put them into a goodness of fit chi-square with expected frequency based on equidistribution. So we'd put in 40 here and 10 here for the obtained frequencies, 25 and 25 for the expected frequencies. Click this and see if we get a significant difference here and not a significant difference there. That tells us our pattern. One problem with that approach, and the reason that it's never really caught on, is that the follow-ups have far less power than the omnibus test. When you crank that down to a two-cell chi-square, you need big old honking effects. And so you can end up with that annoying and querulous outcome that you've got a significant effect that isn't anywhere. If you add to that any sort of alpha correction, you might want to run each of those at the 0.025 instead of the 0.05. Now you've got even less power in your follow-ups relative to your omnibus. So one of the things that you may want to pay attention to, but you may never see, on the other hand, somebody might say, where are your follow-ups?